Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer. SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting.
Than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience.
With Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
It's the amazing Rico Bronya podcast with your host.
Welcome to Rico Bronya. I come to you in the midst of this Met Marlins series to tell you, you should be worried. I'm not here to say don't be worried. I'm not here to say, oh, it's early. There's a lot of time. I'm not here to tell you, don't worry. The bats will wake up. It feels like we've watched a lot of Met baseball over the first few months. We have now consumed 52 games. And just when you thought maybe this limp D offense would finally get going and was showing a pulse and was showing a sign of life, we've got these 2 days in Miami. 2 days in Miami that I think for many in the audience, it's your death of the season. I think we all come to different moments where we look at a team and say, it ain't going to happen this year. And these 2 games against the Miami Marlins on Friday night and late Saturday afternoon, for many, some of you already gave up. Some of you already saw the death of the season weeks ago, dare I say months ago. But these 2 games against Miami, I don't want to hear how nasty Yuri Perez is. I don't want to hear how nasty Max Meyer is and how we have to tip our hat. We've seen way too much of this season, and these 2 games against the Marlins were the limpiest of limp offenses as we have seen all year long. And so I wasn't planning on doing a Rico until this series was over, until we could put the bow on this 3-game series against the Marlins. But I thought after they lost the Saturday game, and then after the Knicks took care of business against the Cavaliers, it'd be a good time to talk about these 2 games, talk through all of our issues, and try to see, maybe they can turn this thing around. Though I don't feel that way, because this offense is bad. It's just not good. And, you know, even bad offenses will go through periods of time where they hit, where they score runs, where they lace hits together. Right now, when you look at this Met lineup, and the lineup that Carlos Mendoza is running out every single day, it's just not good enough. And where do you want to start? Bo Bichette, we gave all the credit to for the Washington series. He was waking up. Bo Bichette was emerging from his slumber. What has he done in these first 2 games against the Marlins? Marcus Semien is pound for pound the worst offensive player in baseball. I'm not even going to kill Juan Soto and call him Juan Solo because he never comes up with guys on base. How can we get mad at him? And it's tough to get mad at A.J. Ewing, who is a rookie, who had so little experience at AAA before the Mets finally called him up. It's tough to get mad at Carson Bench, who hit into some of the worst luck in the opener of this series against Miami. But in this series, he's 0 for 7, and he's been on base one time. It is going to be tough to score runs when your leadoff hitter doesn't get on base. We can get on Mark Vientos, and we can certainly get on Brett Beatty. And can we get on Carlos Mendoza? Sure. I know there are still a lot of people I've seen in the email who says, hey, the Mets are about to have a bad road trip against Washington and Miami. Should Carlos Mendoza survive this? We can do the same discussion we had 2 weeks ago and talk about how sometimes firing a manager is unfair, but it can spark a team, and we could cite what's going on in Philadelphia with the Phillies. But right now, whether they do that or not, this offense is just not good enough. The thing about the Phillies, and I would have fired Mendy a month ago, as we talked about here on the Rico, so I'm not using this as a defense of Carlos Mendoza. It's not. I would have fired him weeks ago. If you fire him tomorrow, I'd understand it. You try anything to save a season. You try anything to spark a season. But the Philadelphia Phillies have talent. They have a lot of talent on their roster. This team just doesn't right now. Now, let's go through some of these games. One was worse than the other. In game one on Friday night, yes, there was a lot of bad luck. And yes, sometimes when you watch a Met Marlin game, you question how the Miami Marlins came into this series 22-29 and how it was possible that like a day earlier, Dom Smith is hitting a Little League inside the park home run. Meanwhile, a day later, Jacob Marcy is making not one, but two ridiculous plays against Carson Bench. There is bad luck involved. Just like we mentioned earlier this week, a few Ricos ago, there was a lot of good luck involved where the Mets were getting breaks. And when they get those breaks, you take it, you don't complain, you smile, and you move on. I'm not bitching about the bad breaks that they've had because I think that you have to create your own breaks. And I think that the bad breaks, and specifically what I'm talking about is the Marcy play on Bench to start the game on Friday night, the Marcy play against Bench in the sixth inning. Those were the two like ridiculous highlight reel plays in which either one of them drops, it's a different game. I acknowledge that. But the reason I think that it jumps out at you and the reason it jumps out at me is because they don't do anything else offensively. So when there is that one or two play in which someone makes a remarkable catch and they make a gold glove Superman-like catch, it's just a bigger deal when your offense is this bad. But yeah, I like everybody else, see Marcy make that play, and I say, what the hell is going on? They play the Marlins, they become superheroes. They play the Marlins, they make every play. But I think it becomes a bigger deal, and it stands out so much more because the offense didn't do anything else. On Friday night against the Miami Marlins and Yuri Perez and Andrew Nardi and Michael Peterson and Pete Fairbanks, do you know how many at-bats the Mets had with runners in scoring position? The answer to that question is zero. They didn't get one at-bat, one opportunity with runners in scoring position. That's ineptitude. You know how many walks the Mets drew in this game on Friday night? One. And it happened with two outs and nobody on in the ninth inning. They could not draw, they couldn't get base runners. And so when Juan Soto hits that bomb ball home run in the first inning, I am certainly not going to say what I said last year. Like, I think the Juan Solo effect is very different in 2026 than it is in 2025, in that, and I'm not even looking at the numbers to like back up this point. This is pure watching every pitch, my feeling around Soto. Last year, it felt like he came up with a lot of opportunities with guys on base, and he came up small. And then, with nobody on base, he'd hit a home run. And so the Juan Solo moniker was half, hey, I'm happy you hit a home run, but it was also half frustration that he wasn't getting the big hit. That's not the case this season. Not to say he's Mr. Clutch, but how many times is Juan Soto coming up with guys on base? That's another little trivia question. So Juan Soto has come up to the plate seven times in this series against the Marlins on Friday and Saturday, seven times. Do you know how many total base runners Juan Soto came up with? Like, he comes up, how many guys have been on base combined in the seven plate appearances that Juan Soto has taken in this series against the Marlins? I help you out. The answer is zero. So much like the Mets had zero opportunities with runners in scoring position on Friday night, and much like they drew zero walks until two outs in the ninth inning, Juan Soto, who's hot right now, Juan Soto is the only hitter right now. I guess it was Bench until recently and Bichette until recently because there were positive signs in Washington. But if you include these first two games against Miami, the only guy showing a pulse is Juan Soto. And he's come up with a grand total of zero men on base over the first two games of this series. So I ain't picking on him. I'm not going to mockingly call him Juan Soto. When he hits a home run in the top of the first inning, I'm thrilled because I know it's possible that may be the only run they score. And that's the story of Friday night. The story is they couldn't score a goddamn run. They start Tobias Myers. Now, I'm going to question a lot of stuff with the pitching. And while I question that stuff, don't think I'm moving on from this limp dick offense, because I'll get back to them and how bad they are. The reason the Mets have lost these two games against the Marlins is 1,000% their offense. So while I do want to spend some time talking about Tobias Myers and Sean Manaea and Jonah Tong and Freddie Peralta, let's not get it twisted. Let's not get it confused. They can't score runs. They lost these two games because they can't score runs. By the way, if you downloaded the Rico Bronya, we always appreciate that. If you're consuming the Rico Bronya live on a Saturday night, minutes after the Knicks beat the Cleveland Cavaliers, you must just hate basketball. Or you must be like me, a Net fan, that wants to avoid talking about the Knicks unless I'm paid to do so on WFN. But I do appreciate anybody hanging out with us on a Saturday night in this sort of emergency therapy edition of the Rico Bronya. Anyhow, let me get to Tobias Myers. Tobias Myers is a starting pitcher. Now, we have addressed on previous Ricos that he has not been extended at all this season. Like, his pitch counts when used out of the bullpen has been mostly in the 20s. A few of them hit the 30s, but they have treated Tobias Myers like a relief pitcher. And so transitioning him into the rotation would be challenging. It'd be challenging to do it, but you'd have to do it by slowly stretching him out, which the Mets are able to do considering they use openers, they use bulk guys, they use basically tag team pitchers in a way. So what I'm confused about in the handling of Myers is that while I'm not asking for his Friday start to have gone into the fifth or sixth inning, why were they in such a rush to take him out? He threw 20 pitches in this game. He did give up the one-out double to Sturie Ruiz, but there's a runner on second. There's one out. It's the bottom of the second. The bottom of the order is coming up. And Mendy pops on out to bring in Sean Manaea. And I had an issue with two things on that. Number one, why are you not trying to extend Myers? Why not? They were extending him in spring training. Then once the season started and they had enough starting pitchers, they made him a more traditional reliever. But the opportunity is there right now to have him throw 37 pitches, which would not be that crazy considering what he's thrown this season. And then maybe in his next appearance, those 45 to 50 pitches. And if eventually he can be stretched out to at least be, if not a starting pitcher, a guy who can go four innings out of the bullpen. So I thought with the flux of this rotation, you weren't guaranteed that Tyler Thornton was going to stay in the rotation. We later found out he was going to be optioned. Tong was coming up, but he wasn't guaranteed more opportunities in this rotation or in this bullpen. We later found out he'll get another one. David Peterson isn't secured a rotation spot. So you've got enough openings where Tobias Myers should be stretched out. This is something I suggested and we talked about 2 weeks ago. So it's not new. It didn't just come out of nowhere. And they're not doing that. So I disagree with Carlos Mendoza and David Stearns about that. But then they go to Sean Manaea. Sean Manaea should not be coming in the middle of innings. We saw this in the Yankee game 5 days ago. Like, Sean Manaea is a starting pitcher who happens to be pitching out of the bullpen. And so to bring him in with a runner on second and one out, I don't think was fair to him and certainly wasn't fair to us. And think about how the Marlins scratched out the tying run. He gives up a stolen base to Ruiz. So remember, he comes into a game with a guy on base, something he's not used to, and then gets a ground ball to first base and the runner scores. That's how he gave up the run. Was that really the best strategy? If you were going to take Tobias Myers out, I would have used a more traditional reliever to get out of that inning. We talked about this from that Sunday Yankee game. It was kind of the same discussion. But obviously, Carlos Mendoza don't care. He don't give a damn. And so Manaea came in, didn't do a bad job. I don't think Manaea did a bad job at all, but he gives up the tying run. I thought outside of that, Manaea looked decent. He did give up the leading run. Two outs, nobody on in the fourth inning. And he gives up that triple to Sturie Ruiz, which was bad luck, that little fly ball down the right field line. The killer was the base hit to Owen Cassie right after that. That was the big one. Lefty on lefty, first pitch, jumps on it, and I had that same sick feeling we all had. That's going to be the difference in the game. That run number two, given up by Sean Manaea, the first one was credited to Tobias Myers, this one on Manaea's track record, you thought that could really be the difference in this game. Now, after that, again, I thought Manaea did a good job. He gave up a leadoff double in the fifth, and he got through it. He ends up going 3 2/3 innings, doesn't walk anybody. His velocity looked a little bit higher, a little bit better. So I don't think he was bad. Tobias Myers wasn't bad. But the problem is when you've got an offense that can't score runs, one tiny little itty-bitty mistake will cost you. And so the two runs the Mets gave up, think about how they gave up these runs. A runner on second, one out, a steal of third, and a little tapper to first base. That's how the Marlins score run number one to tie the game. And then two outs and nobody on, a fly ball double by Ruiz, and an RBI single by Owen Casey. All with two outs. That's how the Marlins score the two runs. That's the difference in this game. The obvious positive was Jonah Tong. That was very, very encouraging. And when they called up Jonah Tong, I was skeptical. And why wouldn't I be? Why wouldn't we all be, considering how much he has struggled in AAA? But you hear Gary Cohen describe that they had him working on things. And so it almost reminds you of spring training a little bit when you've got pitchers and you don't want to go nuts about their stats because they're working on new pitches. They're working on a circle change. They're working on a curveball. I don't know if that's just excuse making, but the fact that Jonah Tong against a major league lineup, I know the Marlins aren't Murderers Row, but against a major league lineup, he faces nine batters and gets everyone out except for the leadoff walk in the eighth that he quickly erased on a nifty 4-6-3 double play. Jonah Tong was impressive. Got a lot of swing and misses. He looked good, and I can't even disagree with the Mets being enthralled enough by Tong to keep him on the major league roster and give him another turn through, whether it's as an official start or being used as a bulk guy, because the Mets could use that strategy as well. They've done it with David Peterson. They could even team them together. I don't think they're going to do that, but they could. Or they could team Tong and Manaea together, kind of like what they did on Friday night. So that was encouraging. Jonah Tong was encouraging. Sean Manaea was slightly encouraging. The bottom line is the Mets played a game on Friday night in which they used three pitchers, Tobias Myers, Sean Manaea, and Jonah Tong. Three guys that were considered a part of the starting pitching depth the Mets had back in spring training. Myers was going to become a reliever, Manaea was going to be a long man, and Jonah Tong was going to go to AAA. They used those three guys, and over the course of eight innings, gave up five hits and two runs and only walked two guys. That is a parade-worthy performance by the Met pitching. And they threw it down the drain because the offense did nothing. So there are your positives. I don't want to ignore them. They pitched well. They pitched well enough to win. And it got DeGrommed by the garbage offense who threw it away. And you look up and down. I'm looking at my scorecard. I mean, everybody sucked. I'm looking up and down. Benj 0 for 3, though we got robbed twice. Bichette with a real weak 0 for 4. Soto had the two hits. Vientos bounces into a double play in the fourth. He goes 0 for 3. Beatty goes 0 for 2 before he gets pinch hit 4 for Tyrone Taylor. Marcus Semien 0 for 3. A.J. Ewing 1 for 3 and then gets caught stealing. I think that was the play where Gary Cohen called him safe, even though he was out. I think he even said he'll beat that easily. As the throw is going into the runner and A.J. Ewing is tagged out. And I don't even blame Ewing for running. I was very mixed about it. So just to go back to that situation, it was the top of the eighth inning. The Mets are down 2-1. Two outs and nobody on. A.J. Ewing, base hit to right field. Really good at bat. Eight pitch at bat. Smokes one into right field for a base hit. The batter is Nick Morabito. The on-deck hitter is Luis Torrens. And they're doing this against a right-hand pitcher, so it's certainly possible that MJ Melendez would pinch hit for Torrens. Melendez ended up doing that an inning later. So here was my thought. Thought number one is, yeah, man, you got to steal second base. This is why you're here.
And to ask for back-to-back hits from the bottom of the order, not really realistic. So go steal second base, give yourself a chance to steal that tying run. But the other part of me where I hesitated was, if Morabito just comes up and makes out, you now ensure that all you need is one base runner to get Soto to the plate. And you ensure Bo Bichette comes to the plate if that means something for you. It means nothing for me right now, but if it means something for you. So by having Ewing run and having him thrown out, now you go into the bottom of the ninth inning, or the top of the ninth inning, I should say, needing to get multiple guys on base for Soto to come up. And think about what happened. Two outs, nobody on, bench walk, Bichette flies out, no Juan Soto. But it also kind of reminded me that it's time for me to open my mouth again and start bitching and complaining about Juan Soto and how he should not be hitting third. He should be leading off, but I guess we're past that because he didn't do well for a couple of days and Benj has played well in the leadoff hole. So how about you bat him second? And why do you bat him second? Because in nights like Friday, it's always a hypothetical when we talk about how batting one or two just ensures more plate appearances than batting three, four, five. It's easy to understand, but you know, you think, well, but there's a lot of games in which the guy batting second and the guy batting third is going to get the same amount of at-bats. So why is it a big deal? You look at Saturday's game, the guy who made the final out of the game was the sixth place hitter. So it wouldn't have made a difference. I totally get it. But on a lot of nights, or some nights, it does make a difference. And on the night of Friday, Bo Bichette batted instead of Juan Soto. You good with that? Everybody out there good with that? In the name of we can't bat two lefties in a row? And oh, I bat him third because there'll be more guys on base. There's nobody on base for him. He's batting third. There hasn't been a single goddamn person on base for him in this entire series. So spare me with that. If Juan Soto is batting second or leading off, but I guess I can't have that argument anymore, he bats on Friday night. I know it's only one example. I could sit here and go through every game, and it's probably only going to be a small amount of games, but that's still a game. It's still a game. It's still a game where it could have been different if Juan Soto came up instead of Bo Bichette with two outs on a runner on first in the ninth inning. But that's not what happened. The other thought before I read some of your game one emails from the RicoB@gmail.com account, someone's got to teach Carson Benj when to challenge and when not to challenge. This is not a big deal, but it's a big deal. The Mets over the last few days and really throughout this season have oddly challenged. Like they have picked horrible opportunities to question a pitch, but then there are moments where you have to and they don't. So going back to that ninth inning on Friday night, where Carson Benj eventually drew a walk, the 3-1 pitch to Benj was a ball that was called a strike. The Mets had a challenge available. They're down by a run in the ninth inning, and he doesn't challenge. And it was blowing my ever God mind. That doesn't make sense. It was blowing my ever something mind, whatever it means. I didn't get it. That's what I'm trying to say. Luckily, he walked on the next pitch. So I guess I shouldn't bring it up, but I'm going to bring it up because there are certain situations where you have to challenge. It's like the opposite of what we've bitched about in the first few innings of a game where it doesn't make sense to challenge. It's selfish of you to challenge. It's emotional for you to challenge. When it's the ninth inning and it's two outs and nobody on and the count is 3-1 and you're down by a run and the 3-1 pitch is borderline, and spoiler alert, it wasn't borderline, it was a ball, how are you not challenging? So along with the fact that the Mets are a terrible guest team who take pitches down the middle with two strikes, and also miss out on 3-1 cookies down the middle and then chase on sliders in the dirt, they're a dumbass offensive approach team. Besides that needs to get fixed. How about a little smarter when it comes to the challenging? Now let's get to some of your emails. I pulled a few of them, specifically game one emails, where the Mets lost by a final score of 2-1. All right. Let's start it off with Frank, who writes, Evan, this team is not fun to watch. three hits. Three goddamn hits. I can't take it anymore. Why do I put myself through this? I blame my late father for making me a Mets fan. Destined for disappointment forever. LOL. Great job on the podcast. We think we're destined for failure, but if the New York Knicks can be a win away from the NBA Finals and have a legitimate chance to win an NBA championship, shouldn't that give us all hope? AW writes, is Mendy aware that the Mets are losing this game, again, Friday night's game, by only one run? But today, that might as well be 10 runs. So why is he pinch-hitting Tyrone Taylor for Brett Beatty and then pushing Bo Bichette to third so the offensive powerhouse Vidal Brujan can play shortstop? Is Tyrone Taylor and his 634 OPS versus lefty so much better than Brett Beatty in that spot? Sure, Beatty's OPS versus lefties begins with a 5. It's 100 points lower than Tyrone's, but Beatty is clearly the better hitter. Right, Mendy? Don't you have to learn or have to let him learn to hit lefties? So I'm conflicted about this one, AAW, because last year, from about July on, Brett Beatty hit lefties. Hit him very well. This season, he hasn't. Tyrone Taylor has better numbers against lefties than Brett Beatty, and I think that as much as people scream and yell that that's analytics, that's also the guy who statistically just gives you a better chance. I guess I'm saying analytics in a different way, but it's the guy who gives you a better chance to get a base hit. Like, I'm no longer in this world of protecting Brett Beatty. He's playing every day. He's hitting 235. Like, he's not protected from being pinch hit for. And quite frankly, neither one of them are good options. Brett Beatty is not a good option. Brett Beatty being the fifth and fourth place hitter for the New York Mets is a big part of why this offense did nothing so far in this series against the Marlins. He's not good enough. So that email, AW, if you sent it a year ago, I'd be with you. I'd be screaming and yelling. Dude, I'm past it. Brett Beatty hasn't done enough for me to sit here on the Rico and say, you can't pinch hit for him against the lefty. Why not? He's not any good. Bob writes,
hey there, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a new show. It's called Money Moves, and your money is going to move. We're going to help you make better financial decisions. We're going to call out the BS you're finding all over social media. We're going to give you actionable guidance to make your financial life clearer, less stressful. We're going to answer your financial questions and take the mystery out of your financial life. Follow and listen to Money Moves with Jill Schlesinger wherever you get your podcasts.
A night of warning track power. Just amazing how bad this offense is. Thanks for the Ricos. I look forward to them, and you do a good job. You are right that Friday night featured a lot of teases, a lot of warning track teases. You had the Carson Bench play in the first inning in which Marcy made just an incredible play. A.J. Ewing hit one well with two outs in the second inning. Luis Torrens gave one a ride in the sixth inning. Benj got robbed again by Jacob Marcy in the sixth inning. Yeah, it was a lot of that. But like I said earlier, the great play where you get robbed on, the high velocity line drive, that's bad luck. The reason it is noticeable is because you're not good. You know what I mean? Like, those plays and those moments become emphasized as bad luck. Oh, the Mets, we never get a break because they only had three hits. Like, you can have those moments. In fact, most teams do, where they have moments of bad luck. Everyone does. But then you make up for it because you still get 9 or 10 hits. The Mets don't. Ralph writes, why can't they let Sean Manaea come in with a clean inning? He doesn't do well with inherited runners. It's sickening and pissing me off. We're trying to be too cute. Let's just play baseball. We could become exciting with all these kids. Definitely turning off the TV. I agree with you. I do not want Manaea in the middle of innings, but Mendy's done it twice in a row. Sean wrote the same thing. I'm writing this as Sean Manaea comes into the game to light it on fire. Why would they not let Tobias Myers just be a starter? Dude, if Tobias Myers, and I think it's reasonable. We went through his pitch counts the other day, like how much he's thrown. In fact, I'll pull it up real quick to go over it again. But if you are at least saying to yourself, I'm going to try to begin the process of stretching out Tobias Myers, it's not going to happen overnight. He's not going to throw five innings. Nobody's suggesting that. but we're going to let him begin to stretch out. He could have gone and completed that second inning. In fact, he's pitched this season 1, 2, 3 times where he's pitched into a third inning of work and just completing two innings. He's done more often than not. 2, 4, 6, 9. 9 of his 17 appearances have been two innings or more. Think about that. Anyhow, let me get to that pitch count thing. So if you go in recent order, so I'll start with more recent to back, going in to the game on Friday, here were his pitch counts. 25, 25, 10, 12, 10, 21, 36, 25, 40, 28, 30, 36, 30, 20, 14, 39. So you could see early in the season, he was in the 30s. In fact, one game he got to 40. More recently, he's been in the mid-20s. Based on that, without pushing him too much, he could complete two innings and maybe get to about 30 or so. And then in his next appearance, maybe you try to get to 40. And you slowly move him up. Taking him out with a runner on second and one out and a pitch count of 20 just wasn't necessary. It was more strategic than anything else.
Can I ask a stupid question?
I can't hear you, but again, that could be me, Hoff. So if you have something to say, say it, and I'll pretend like I can hear you.
Well, I was going to ask a question. I was going to ask if the Mets are being too analytical. I'll text you.
Oh, wait. I just switched a button so I can hear you. What did you say real quick? Say it again.
I was asking if the Mets are being too analytical.
By the way, it is my fault. There's something with my computer, so it's not a you thing. I've learned that. So whatever Hoff said, I'm going to go with I agree with. I'll say, yeah, right on there, Pete. Right on there, Pete. But anyhow, I would begin the process of stretching out Tobias Myers, and they should have done that in this game. They did not do it. Final email from game one. This is from somebody who went to the game. Fred went to the game. He says, Ev, I'm writing this as I leave Lone Depot Park among the tens of fans who went to tonight's LD disaster. Seriously, I haven't seen anything limp like this since clips of Willis Reed. I'm trying to think of an Edwin Diaz cockfighting joke, but this is a family-friendly show. And what made it worse was each Marlins pitcher came in with a higher ERA than the guy he relieved. Perez, Nardi, Anderson, Fairbanks all had ERAs of 5 or higher. And yes, the Marlins made some nice defensive plays, but they had one non-Juan Soto hit, and that was A.J. Ewing in the 8th inning. On a brighter note, look who he ran into. Too bad he wasn't playing tonight. And he secured a picture with Edgardo Alfonso. That's cool. At least Fred was able to meet Fonzie on this night. And yes, they could have used him in the lineup. They could also use, I'd make him the everyday second baseman. I'd tell Marcus Semien, get the hell out of here. We'll go with Fonzie the rest of the way. And I don't mean to pick on Marcus Semien, but I guess I will. He is making a lot of money. And before I get into ripping on Marcus Semien, I have misspoken numerous times on this, Rico, so I want to clarify. When talking about the Semien Nimmo trade, they secured 2 fewer years from Semien compared to Nimmo. After this season, Semien has 2 years left on his deal. Nimmo has 4. So I think in the past I've said only 1. It's 2 years. I want to make that clear before we continue talking about this. He sucks. That's what I'll say. And hearing anybody explain to me, but it's still a smart move. Because it's 2 less years of Brandon Nimmo, and Brandon Nimmo is going to age terribly, and he's a DH. Fine. I'm not breaking down the offseason right now. I'm not pining for Brandon Nimmo. I'm not doing any of that. I am simply stating a fact into a microphone, which is that Marcus Semien stinks. That's it. We don't have to talk about, well, but it was worth it. Brandon Nimmo can't even walk in the outfield. He's a whatever. We'll do that in October. There's going to be a lockout. We'll have plenty of time to break down and reenact all the moves that were made and not made from 25 into 26. Marcus Semien is the single worst offensive player who plays every day. That's just the numbers. His defense has been okay. I think the metrics are probably tougher on him than the eye test. The eye test says he's been fine. He's made a few mistakes. Obviously, the debacle in D.C. a few days ago. But you can't be this bad. You cannot be this bad. He is awful. And you look around this team and you start to wonder, hey, Mendy, could you give him a day off? Not because I think it's going to get him going, but because it means we don't have to watch him play baseball. Now, right now, the Mets don't have a ton of options, but assuming Lindor ever comes back, Jared Young may be on the way back. He has position versatility. There can be a way where Brett Beatty, who looked pretty good at second base, plays a little second base, or dare I say A.J. Ewing plays a little second base. But Marcus Semien is very tough to watch. Now, let me get to game two of this series. We know the offense sucks. I could repeat the same stuff about how everyone is awful. So let's talk about Freddy Peralta for a little bit. Freddy was okay. You want me to define his outing? He was okay. Giving up four runs is too much, but he went seven innings. And on the last Rico or two Ricos ago, I lose count. I was very critical of Freddy Peralta in that he doesn't go deep into games. Not that that's new here. That was the same story in Milwaukee. I was hopeful that maybe that would change here. Maybe the Mets would push him a little bit more. Freddy Peralta has been a five-inning guy. And that's asking a lot when the rest of your rotation features as many questions as it features. So I want to be fair. Freddy Peralta bulldozed his way through seven innings. And he ended up throwing 108 pitches. And his last few were high-stress pitches against the top of the order with a guy on base. So, Freddy Peralta, you gave us innings, and that's appreciated. You also gave up two home runs to Liam Hicks, one of which behind in the count. You also gave up a huge two-run double to Owen Casey in the third inning. You also walked Jacob Marcy, a 200 hitter, on four pitches. This was not his finest day. A seven-inning, four-run performance. You get credit for the seven innings. You get blame for the four runs because those four runs were on you. It's not like there was bad luck involved. Again, Liam Hicks hit two balls over the fence. Don't tell me how close Carson Benj was to robbing one of them. It would have been a robbery. You would have been lucky if he made that play. So I don't want to beat up Freddy Peralta because seven innings, four runs, while it may not be great, is enough for your team to be in the game. And if you have a functioning offense, it should be enough for maybe you to win, dare I say. But again, because this offense is so bad and so putrid, seven innings, four runs was not nearly enough. But I appreciate the seven innings. I think the seven innings matter. I think it mattered in terms of keeping them in the game by pitching the sixth and seventh and by saving the bullpen. And as much as you may not think that matters, the Mets need to win games. They don't have an off day till Thursday, and they have a fresh bullpen on Sunday and Monday and Tuesday, at least for now, where they need to win. And with Christian Scott on the mound, certainly no guarantees going that deep into the game. So credit to Peralta for going seven. It wasn't a great performance. He has not pitched like an ace this season, but the offense was beyond pathetic. Look, Max Meyer's a good pitcher. This is not, as one of our previous emailers wrote, all the guys with five ERAs coming in and shutting you down. Max Meyer comes into this game with a 2.85 ERA, 60 strikeouts in 53 innings. Like, he has been very good, and he gets a lot of movement on his benders. What do they call it again? I'm losing my goddamn mind right now. Sweepers. Yeah. It's a new term. One hit, though. This offense had one base hit, and the one base hit by Mark Vientos was a roller, was a 65-mile-per-hour roller. We talk about bad luck and exit velocity. What was the exit velo on that one? And it was to lead off an inning, and the inning went nowhere. A.J. Ewing struck out. The great Marcus Semien bounced into a double play. I mean, it was bad all the way around. I'm looking up and down my scorecard. Were there good at-bats? Not really. There really weren't. This was like a 2.5-hour tooth extraction in which you're being marched to your death of baseball fandom. Because you watch this game on Saturday, knowing you're about to lose again to the Marlins. You're going to lose this series. You're going to drop 8 games under 500. You could forget the division. I mean, the division is so gone. This was that game where I think there are a lot of Met fans, a lot of Ricoers out there who had this be the death of the season game. Just watching them get mowed down by Max Meyer. They put together the Fugazi rally in the bottom of the ninth inning. And if this was naive, Evan, I would tell you, hey, maybe they'll build off that. Maybe they'll build off a couple of base hits in the bottom of the ninth inning against Andrew Nardi. They're not. They're not a good offense. They're not a good team, unfortunately. Jared Young may be on his way back, and I think that will be the end of MJ Melendez. MJ Melendez gave him a spark for a couple days. He's been awful. And that is a part of the problem. Part of the problem is there is that spot, that hole in the Met order in which you could start Nick Morabito, which they did on Friday. He looked awful. I'm glad he started. We've been calling for him to start, but I have to be honest, he looked overwhelmed, 0-for-3 with 3 strikeouts. So you got that one slot in the order, and that goes along with Beatty and Vientos playing every day. That's just a black hole. And I can't believe I'm saying this into a microphone, but I'm glad Jared Young's coming back. They could use Jared Young. It wasn't that long ago I was asking Carlos Mendoza, your love affair with Jared Young. But now loneliness makes the heart grow stronger. Now we look at Jared Young and say, please come back and help us. We can use you, Jared Young. And I guess that's the perfect state of the New York Mets. Jay in Manhattan writes, Evan, it is the death of the season. I know it's only the middle game of this series. And to be fair, the game isn't even over yet. See, middle of the game, middle of the game. But this team sucks. They can't score. They don't have enough pitching. They don't play smart. They won't change the manager. They won't change their approach. It's going to be a long, irrelevant summer. I can't think of any executive who's done a worse job than David Stearns these last 2 seasons. Edward writes, Evan, can we just establish already that Freddy Peralta is not an ace? He doesn't go deep into games. He's inconsistent. He's not clutch. He's a detriment to the bullpen. He isn't a stopper. I know what I'm in for when he pitches, a laborious, drawn-out pitching performance where you don't know what you're going to get from him inning to inning. The Mets don't have an ace. Holmes was the closest one to that. Freddy Peralta is not an ace, but even with our criticisms of him, he's still a strong 2 or 3, I would say. Because I think what you described is probably that. So yeah, ace, no. I don't think he is. And I remember when they traded for him, I was careful to not use that word to say, I don't know if he's an ace. He's kind of like one of those borderline aces. But you watch him every day. He's a good pitcher. Now, let's not make this bash Freddy Peralta day because it doesn't need to be. It's not like he stinks. It's just that he's 2 things. A, maybe not worth what they gave up. And B, he's not as good as you thought he was or not as good as we thought he would be. But really the bigger problem than all of that is when you don't score runs, 4 runs is way too many. When you don't score runs, 3 runs is way too many. And Gary Cohen talked about this on the broadcast, and it's depressing. How many games they've lost in which they've pitched well enough to win. Friday's game, when you give up 2 runs, you got to win that game. And the Mets have had way too many games this season in which they've lost games in which they've pitched well enough. So can they turn this around? I think I've asked that question almost every single Rico Bronya. Sure, but unlikely. Now, I hope everybody enjoys their Memorial Day. The Mets wrap up this road trip against the Marlins, and then they play 3 games against the Cincinnati Reds at Citi Field, a late Monday afternoon, Memorial Day afternoon game. And then a Tuesday night and a Wednesday night game. They are altering the rotation a little bit. Nolan McLean's going to pitch on Monday. Big bounce back start for Nolan coming off the debacle against the Nationals. And I'm all in favor of seeing more of Jonah Tom. I think at this point with the where this season is going, I think we're always going to be partial to seeing the young guys. Even if the young guys don't perform. Look, Nick Morabito does not look good offensively, but would you rather watch him or MJ Melendez? I think that answers your question. Hopefully this therapy session helped, but it probably didn't because we suck. And it's probably not getting any better. But I can guarantee you this. We'll be here to break it down the entire way through. We appreciate you listening, downloading, and subscribing to another edition of Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.